Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Carmel Harrington is in studio and she is unstoppable. Welcome, Carmel.
Thank you.
Why is she unstoppable? Well, she had a secret ambition to become a writer for a very long time, and once she decided to make it happen, nothing was going to get in her way. The 13th novel is out today. Congratulations on The Stolen Child.
Thank you.
And it kept me in... Can be kind of like gripped there for a couple of evenings. So well done.
Oh, I love hearing that.
People are sending lovely things in about you already. Let's find out a little bit about you, Carmel.
Yeah, okay.
You had a series of jobs, or you were kind of in the normal world for a while.
I was.
Can I call it that?
I was. Well, I'm from Wexford, and I left Wexford at 18, very wide-eyed and innocent, to work with Aer Lingus.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and genuinely, I went to work for Aer Lingus because I wanted to see what was on the other side of the horizon. Mm. I always wanted to travel, and I figured that would be a great way of seeing the world for bargain prices. So I did. I travelled the world for 10 years with them. And I worked kind of in a sales role for them. So I ended up going to countries like Mozambique, South Africa,
wow,
Nigeria, the Philippines. So I was all over the world with them and kind of learned a lot about myself and about the world and different cultures during those years. And then I left them and I went into the private sector and I worked for an American multinational. Most people know them because they invented post-it notes, 3M.
And
I
was
kind of in a sales role with them for another 10 years.
Sales roles which require a chatty persona.
Chatty persona. Yeah. And I kind of, I travelled around Ireland for that. I wasn't in the air. I was on the road. And then I got married and met my husband, Roger, and we started a family. Mm-hmm. And while I was on maternity leave for my daughter, Amelia, who's now 15, I had already written 2 books, but I hadn't shown them to anyone. They were under my bed.
While on maternity leave, while looking after
you? No, I'd written them before.
Well, you had already written.
I'd always wanted to write, Oliver, but I just never found the courage to kind of share it with anyone. I found it really difficult to say to people that I wanted to be a writer because I suppose you're kind of afraid of being judged. Mm-hmm. And also if you say it out loud, then maybe you have to at least try. And there is that fear of failure and you never think that you're good enough.
Tough on yourself.
I was quite tough on myself, yes. And I always told myself, which I find hilarious now, that I was too busy to be a writer. And then when I had children and I got married, I have never been busier in my life, you know. And I really
should be the impossible time.
It should have been the impossible time. And I used to write when the kids, in between naps, I would write. And in the evenings, I would write. And I would say now that I have a dodgy knee and it's because I used to rock the baby's rocker, you know, with my foot while I had the laptop on my lap and I would write words. So it was kind of like, I don't know how I did it, but I did it when they were, I had 2 babies under 2 and I made the decision, okay, I'm going to really go for this and see if I can get...
The brain was firing away. The whole
brain
time.
Was firing away, yeah. I was very inspired, I think, by the kids, really.
This is the first thriller, is it?
The first thriller.
What kind of novels have you been writing up to now?
Kind of family dramas. Now, they all have mystery and suspense in them to some levels, some more than others. But over the last few years, Oliver, I just found myself kind of lean into the dark side. I really enjoyed it. I don't know what that says about me, but I just really wanted to go for it. And then the idea for this book came to me quite a few years ago, actually, from a family horrifying moment. Yeah. And I just wanted to write. I knew I had to write this book. It felt like it was just the book that I needed to write. And I'm so glad I did.
It was a family holiday.
A family holiday in Florida. The kids were, Nate was 5, he's my youngest, and Amelia would have been 6 and a half. And the hotel was, those hotels, the corridors are like The Shining, Jack Nicholson's The Shining, the really long, narrow corridors.
Gigantic hotels.
Gigantic hotel,
in Florida, yeah.
And we were on the 5th floor, but I remember we arrived to the hotel and everyone was shattered because it's Irish time versus local time. Anyhow, so we went straight to bed. 1 bedroom, 2 double beds, 2 massive double beds, actually. I do remember that. So the kids were in one and we were in the other, but like a foot between the 2 beds. And then I woke up at 3 in the morning and heard a banging on the front door. And it was very funny because I went to open the door. My husband stopped me and he said, Carmel, we're in America. It's 3 in the morning. I'm ringing reception. Do not open that door. But I just got it into my head that Nate was out there. You couldn't hear him, but I didn't think it was Amelia, but I thought Nate was there, whatever mother's instinct you have.
And you've just stumbled in the dark through the room.
Stumbled in the dark, yeah.
Half asleep.
And I said to Rog, that's Nate. And he said, don't be silly. Like, he's asleep in our bedroom. So he went back in to check on the children and I opened the door. And of course, there was Nate. And I could still see him. Like, he had this blonde curly hair and he was so distraught. He was sobbing and terrified and so relieved to see me when we opened the door. And then, of course, we were, you know, the terror. Why is he in the corridor in Florida in the middle of the night? Like, how did he get there? Why is he there? And we were so confused. He was confused. But to cut a long story short, we figured out, you know, with time that he'd begun sleepwalking. Of all the times to choose to do it, but in a hotel. I know.
So he just got up unbeknownst.
He got up in the night. The first thing he realised was he was actually at the lift, which, as I said, was at the end of this really, really long corridor.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lift binged and it brought him out of his sleep.
That woke him up.
And he was in his PJs, of course, and he was looking around him going, this is not, like, where's mam, where's dad? And he realised that he was in the corridor and he was so terrified. And then he was trying to remember where the hotel room was. And I had said, luckily enough, when we were checking in and we got out of the lift and found our hotel room, I just said to the kids in conversation, we'll never forget which is our room because it's the last one at the end of this long corridor.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And he remembered that. And then, of course, he ran. So he said he ran so fast, but then he couldn't remember if it was the left or the right door, you know, and he took a guess and he was right. But we were so terrified and it began... It began like for years, every time we went on holiday, we would have to barricade all the exits. So that there was a dining room table.
Because the sleepwalking meant he'd get up and open the door himself.
We found out, like, we went to the doctor, of course, and had him checked over and all the rest. And we found out, like, one in five children sleepwalk at that kind of age. But most of them don't do it again. But then some do it again. And Nate was one of those. He did it for years. We have so many stories, like family stories. And
did the doctor have any theory on why it would continue on? Or what?
He just said it was one of those things and it's actually hereditary. He asked my husband and I, did we sleepwalk? We don't. Mm-hmm. Had never. And then he said, either of you have night terrors? I have always had night terrors.
Really?
And he said it's in the same family. And so... I don't know. I think it's because I have my imagination never stops. So it's even when
it's
I'm
the
sleeping.
The writer's brain, yeah.
I think it must be the writer's brain. And I think Nate has a writer's brain as well. He definitely has that imagination. And I'm not sure that's scientific now. That's just my own thoughts on it.
What age is Nate now?
He's now 13.
So he'd remember that.
He remembers it clearly. He remembers it clearly. And he said that he remembers me saying at the lift, you know, about the room being the last one. But he remembers being very scared and being afraid he tapped on the wrong door, you know, and the relief then when I opened it. But really what kind of inspired the story was, it was a few days later when I stopped crying. I mean, I cried for days.
I'd say you didn't let him go either.
No,
for there.
I slept. He slept with me. Roger was in bed with Amelia for the rest of the holiday and Nate was with me. And I just slept with my arm across him. He wasn't out of my arms for a long time. But it was actually Roger said to me a while later and he said, look at Carmel, you know, if we'd slept through and he hadn't found his way back to our room, who would believe us as parents that we could sleep through a child leaving the same bedroom? You're sharing this small space. No one would believe us. And so they said, so Rog was saying, you know, they would immediately look at us. And then my husband said, actually, they wouldn't look at you, Carmel, because he said, you know, you would be so emotional. Everyone would never believe you could do anything, you know, to a child. And I was thinking, yeah, to my husband, you're so in trouble because he's so measured. He's the yin to my yang, you know, he'd be quite measured where I'd be quite emotional. Okay. I thought, yeah, poor Rog now, he would be the first one in the firing line. So that kind of was the inkling of the story. And I thought, wouldn't it be good to explore a story where a child disappears from a very small enclosed space shared with the parents? And then the reader would have to try and work out along with the parents as to what happened at the end of the book. So that was where the story kind of came from.
And this particular bedroom is on a cruise liner to make it extra terrifying.
Well, we did
what
a family
is wrong
cruise.
With you writers?
I know, I have a really bad mind. But you know, so many of my stories, though, they come from moments in my own life. And we did a family cruise. And if you ever do a family cruise, you'll know that you're in a very small space. Yeah. And I thought, this is great because now we're surrounded by water. So we're really adding to the mystery.
Nice luxury.
So I had a lot to play with then.
And Nate, your 13-year-old the young fella, he actually came up with the idea, did he?
Yeah, he came up with the twist, actually.
And wicked twist.
A wicked twist as well. Yes, he... The kids are both really involved in my writing. They always have. And I always tell them stories about the stories I'm writing. PG versions, right? So they don't get the dark. But I'll tell them and they get really invested. And every day after school, they will say, you know, Mammy, how many words did you write? You know, then they do.
The reverse homework.
Yeah, they do. They keep me in check, which is good. So I feel I have to impress the kids. But seriously. But on this particular occasion, it was just Nate in the car with me. And he was saying to me, you know, what are you working on, Mam? And I told him I had this idea inspired by his sleepwalking shenanigans.
Yeah.
But I said I was trying to work out, like, the motivation for a character, which I can't say because it would be a plot spoiler.
No, yeah.
But the thing that's really important to me is that every book I write relatable characters that could be your family member. Mm-hmm. And while you might not do what the characters do, you can understand why they do them.
Yeah.
That's important to me.
Okay.
So I was saying this to Nate and then he said, what if? And he literally gave me goosebumps because his what if is actually the main twist in the book.
The twist that I now know, but we can't give away.
Yeah, I know. It was so brilliant.
He came
right?
up with that.
He came up with that. I know, you know, he wants all of the money now. He's like, he's literally. But he got a new bedroom, Oliver. The kids both got a new bedroom this year.
They
got
a deal.
Oh, yeah, he got a teenage bedroom. He got an upgrade. A glow up, as they say.
Plus, he writes a page at the end of the book as as in the acknowledgements part.
Thought it was only right.
So he's a budding novelist.
I think he is. Like, although now he wants to be an architect, actually. But he said for years it was a writer, but now he's much more sensible.
Still write the novels on the side. It's fine.
That's what I said. You know, I said go get a proper job, and then you can try your hand at novels on the side.
Mind you, there is architectural fiction, isn't there? As in a kind of a device to, you know, map out a house or your locked room, wherever you're setting your thing. What would have his interest, if he was writing a novel now, what would his 13-year-old brain
choose? Zombies. Do zombies.
I see that. Like, I'm up for that.
Well, me too. And actually, you know, I'm often asked, you know, if you could write one book, and one of these days, I'm going to, under a pseudonym, if a zombie apocalypse novel comes out set in Ireland, it's Carmel Harrington who wrote it. She's just not admitting it because it's my favourite genre to watch. I find it very comforting. Like, if I need a bit of a switch off from life, I'll watch a zombie apocalyptic movie.
Have you watched all of The Walking Dead?
Oh, from start to finish,
75 series.
Yeah, all of them. Oh, many times.
This is about the gratuitous violence that attracts you.
See, I
Carmen.
Don't look at that. It's the character
woman.
Development and the arcs of the characters.
That's true. That's
I love it.
Good.
And the gratuitous violence. Yeah.
It's so cartoonish. Like,
it is.
Barely.
Yes.
By the way, there's this on. He still sleepwalks. And now, would he? No?
Do you know what? He hadn't for years, but when he started secondary school, which coincidentally tied in with him getting his new bedroom I mentioned, and we had a couple of incidences where he woke up before midnight. Well, no, he didn't wake up. He sleptwalked, but he got completely dressed into his uniform and came down thinking he was going. And it was only when he walked into the sitting room to me, I hadn't gone to bed. It wasn't quite midnight. And he came in fully dressed and he was there. I'm so confused. What's going on? And he had looked. It was terrible. But we've had he used to, when he was sleepwalking as a kid, I shouldn't be laughing. It's not funny. But he used to walk into his sister's bedroom and she'd wake up in the middle of the night and she'd say he would be just standing in her bedroom staring at her.
Eyes open.
Yeah, eyes open.
It's
and
terrifying.
He'd have no clue. We would wake up some days. I mean, he was always sneaking into our bed, and I don't mean that, but we could wake up and he could be asleep on the floor in our bedroom, and then he'd go, "Why did you put me here, Mammy?" We'd be like, "Of course we didn't put you on the floor." He would just walk in and he could be anywhere. So he did a lot.
And is it the usual rule? Is it true that we shouldn't disturb a person if you see them walk into the
shouldn't,
room?
Shouldn't, yeah. We just gently bring them back and kind of just calmly bring them back and let them kind of fall back asleep again. It's usually about 4 or 5 hours after they go to bed, and that tracks, you know. And
that's the deep sleep time.
A deep sleep, and that's when it all happens.
The REM.
Yeah.
Someone's actually sent us in a message there, just listening about sleepwalking. My daughter regularly sleepwalks and talks. She's 25 and still does it. We've had scary times when she's left the house or the hotel room while on holidays. Normally she doesn't wake up. One time she woke up in the hallway of a hotel, couldn't remember what room, trying to get to the reception, went in the lift, couldn't use it. There was no key card, of course, one of those places. Tried to get to the stairway, couldn't get out. There was no key card. And fortunately, a while later, the cleaner and the hoovering helped her. It must have woken
That's
her up.
That's terrifying.
Very traumatic is literally what they're saying to us.
You see, it does happen. And you think it's a fantastical story. But honestly, this happened and it's gone down in kind of lore in our family now. But we had to be very careful when he was small. He couldn't go on sleepovers, and when he'd go to his nan and granddad's. One of the things we found out when we brought him to the doctor was that typically it's when you're out of your own environment. So that tracked again. We were
Is
in Florida.
That right? Interesting.
Yes. Okay. And so you kind of had to make sure that he was only somewhere where he knew where he was. And that lady who just sent that story and her daughter was in a hotel.
Yes.
You know, so often it's hotel place. Rooms. That's what
kind
happens.
Something to do with the displacement or the different
I think so.
Space or whatever. Did you go on a cruise? Because it's obviously very pertinent to the story here.
Yeah.
Have you been on family cruises?
We did a couple of family cruises. Best thing ever to do as a family. There's something for everybody on a cruise and lots of entertainment. So the kids adored it. We did one to Bermuda and we did one around the Mediterranean, which is where this book is set.
We went to the Bermuda Triangle.
We went to the Bermuda Triangle and didn't get taken. No, nobody took us. We'd no incident. Actually, we went through that without a single sleepwalking incident. It was great.
Phew.
Phew,
that
yeah.
is the scariest place. Yeah. And so it's set in the 1980s and it time hops
it
quite
does.
A bit.
There's three timelines, actually. The 60s in London, 1980s for the when the child goes missing, and then of course present day when we try to work it all out.
Yeah, it's a good crack. Kind of mothering is the theme here, isn't
it? It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Very much so.
Yeah, I did like to explore that. And in particular, I wanted to explore how mothers wear, I think parents actually, not just mothers, but parents, we wear masks, don't we? So every day you wear a mask of some description. You don't want your kids to know if you're having a bad day. You try to make it all safe mm-hmm. for them. But I think that in this particular case, it's to an extreme level that the characters are wearing masks to cover past traumas. And one in particular, and again, I won't say which, but one of the characters at the end, you know, the mask comes off and all the secrets come tumbling out.
Dastardly doings are
uncovered. I know.
Oh my God.
It was great fun writing them though, Oliver. Like, I really did enjoy
it. It's lovely that you get to write these now, because you went through quite a lot of rejection.
I did.
Which is typical of writers, but I'm 47 is a lot.
I know. Some of those were actually, still to this day, I haven't had an answer, but I take them as a no. I think at this point, 13 years, 15 years later.
It's much worse, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. Because the way it was back then, I bought the writer's yearbook, which is like a Bible. It's this huge thing. And I would literally highlight whoever I was sending my query out to. And then I'd draw a line through it then when I didn't get a response or did get a response. And I just kept going. And I exhausted the Irish ones very quickly. Then I exhausted the UK ones, and I like had chalked up 47, and I started on America then. And I got as far as B in America, and an agent said yes. It was a great relief. Yeah, 47.
Just kept going. There must have been so many times you went, I'm going to give up.
Yeah, I kind of think, not sure. I think maybe I was just so exhausted. I wasn't sleeping much because I had two babies under two. And I think maybe it was just pure stubbornness. And I just kept doing it.
As much you can do when you're under pressure.
Maybe I was sleepwalking through it. I don't know. But I just kept doing it. But I did. I kept going back to it. And I had this thing in my head. I wanted to do it for my kids, which might sound a little bit cheesy. And I apologize. I don't mean to be cheesy. But I really genuinely had thought when the kids came along, I wonder what their special talents are going to be. And, you know, as a kind of a new mother, I really vowed to help them achieve whatever their life's ambitions were. And it struck me that I was a bit of a fraud, because ever since I had been a kid, I had wanted to be a writer. Mm. I had already written these two books and had just hidden kind of this part of me. And I thought, right, I better now get out of my own way. And
that's why you didn't tell anyone along the way.
No, I was just, it was ridiculous, really, you know.
It meant you'd no one to back you up, though, when you were getting rejected so often.
Possibly. But you know, after...
Your husband.
My husband was amazing. He was the first person that I really was very honest with, and he was so encouraging. And I was very lucky I met him, actually, because he never let me forget when I said one day I'd like to be. And every day he would say, Carmel, we have to make this happen. But.
And you keep a couple of secrets here and there, don't you? What's this about you and the cigarettes?
What are you talking about? Are you trying to get me in trouble?
You're a writer. I think you might have said this somewhere before.
I must have.
Are we unearthed?
My kids are going
very
to be
sharp
listening.
Team here.
A long, 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 long time ago, in a previous life, Oliver Callan, I may have smoked, but I did. You know, when I was
strangely, you don't look like a smoker.
I
don't. Smoking.
I was like, do you know? And it was terrible when I was when I worked with Aer Lingus. Like, you were nearly encouraged to, you know. Squeeze into your uniform a little bit easier.
Way back then.
Like, it's 100 years ago.
But it was acceptable in society.
I haven't smoked in a long time. My sister actually dropped me in it with the kids, because, of course, I tell them if they ever smoke, they are being, you know, sent out of the home in shame. But my sister let slip that I smoked once to my kids, which I'm still sore about. Yeah. So now, thank you, Oliver, for bringing that up.
But when you're giving them up, it's a kind of a theme of yours. When you're trying something, you don't tell other people. So you do it quietly and then
quite
announce
it. I did exactly that.
Approach.
I gave up smoking. I told nobody, because I didn't want to have that thing where everyone would say, oh, you're in a bad mood because you're smoking. You know, the way you were kind of looking at
it. Are you still off them? Constant
judgment. Yeah, constant. And it was ages after I'd given up. And my dad actually said, you're not smoking, Carmel. And I went, I've stopped. I was so smug. I was delighted
with
myself.
Yeah. That's a really good approach. Don't tell anyone what you're at.
It's my top tip. Tell nobody. Yeah.
Kind of surprise rather than disappointment.
I think so.
Really work
out.
Now, you're in a lovely community of writers. Catherine Ryan Howard, friend of the show, has given an amazing recommendation for this.
She's my bestie,
Because she does twists herself.
So I was very nervous. And she was the person, actually, when I came up with the whole plot for this story, and I met her for coffee, and I said, I've got this idea, what do you think? And she said, that's a thriller. And I thought, I know. Am I allowed to write a thriller? Am I allowed to join your murderous clan? And she thought
deeply and darkly about it.
Yeah, she did. But when she heard the twist, she said to me, if you don't write this, I'm going to write it. So I thought, okay, well, that's Toby.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah. So it was really, but I felt like...
Wait, writers tell each other the big plot of something they
haven't written. There's only two. Hazel Gaynor is New York Times historical novelist. She's incredible. And she's the third one in our particular gang. We have a very small gang, but they're the only two people I would trust. But I would 100% trust them, and I do. So both of them would have known.
Do you read each other then?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we are.
Have you read Catherine Ryan Howard's name?
I have, and it's incredible.
It's good, I have too.
I know. Yeah, have you read it too? It's really good, isn't it? She's got
can't say anything about it.
She's dark and clever. You know, there's just a deadly combination. You know, but yeah, they're great fun actually. The two
really good fun, like yourself, Carmel.
Yeah, we do. You have to. We work hard and play hard, so we will always. We do things. We just had a Galentine's lunch.
There's absolutely. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, the three of us, and we literally were there, and we bought presents for each other. It's ridiculous. It's not long since Christmas and we did presents, but we are very nice to each other. We love each other, and we do celebrate and also work hard together as well.
Yeah. You work hard because like the end of the book is like, well, here's the one I've written for next year.
Isn't that great? I know. I do like to.
Girls.
Yeah, I have to try and, you know, overachieve. You know, I've always been a bit of an overachiever. But yeah, no, the Nowhere Girls will be this time next year. So I'm very excited about
what
that.
What do you
too.
Do to unwind? Do you watch Silly Frippery on television?
I do. I love a Netflix series, I have to say. So
I'm being attacked for being anti-Meghan this morning. Would you be, are you a pro-Meghan person?
Do you know what I love watching shows like that? And it's the same with, like, say, the Martha Stewart series on Netflix. Yeah. It's like a character study. So I watch it and I literally watching it with a writer's mind going, these are brilliant characters to include in books. And I'm going to watch it. And I think the way I see it is that a lot of the things that Meghan Markle is going to share in that series will not be attainable for most of us.
Right.
But there'll be one or two little bits. Like I do. I have to say, I saw her saying that she likes to put her condiments in bowls. I would like to put my condiments in bowls. I have to say, I quite enjoy that. You know, I like to make food look nice.
Yeah.
So maybe I might.
I'd be like, do you have to scrape the mustard that wasn't used back into the little jar
kind
and is it tainted now?
Only at Christmas, though. You know, you do those fancy things when the guests come over. Not for every day for, you know, for tea at six.
I hate to, you know, say that this might be biased for you, but you are wearing a necklace that says Notions.
I know.
And maybe this is why you love Meghan, because she's proud of Notions, isn't she?
Yeah. But you know what Notions are? Like Notions are the actual definition of Notions, aside from the use we do in Ireland. But Notions are those embellishments that are put on clothes. So years ago, you'd go to a dressmaker and you would bring your good tweed coat and you would say, I would like some Notions. What would you like?
Are you serious?
Maybe pearl buttons, maybe a nice collar. So if you go into a haberdashery store, there's a word for you.
Beautiful word.
You go to the Notions section.
Oh my God,
and that's where all of the that's where all of the buttons and all the lovely things are. So Notions are about making the best version of yourself. That's how I see it. So when I talk about having Notions, I want to be the very best version of Carmel Harrington that I can be, whether that's as a novelist, as a mother, as a wife, as a friend, you know, as a daughter.
You mean it as a compliment? That Catherine Ryan Howard, she's full of Notions.
She is. I told you, she is. She's a clever Notionist. But no, I do love the word Notions. And I think that for years, I saw it in a negative context. And I was like, I can't have Notions. Therefore, I better not write a book because people might think I have Notions. I know if I was to say, like, I can remember after my first book was published and was a bestseller, I met my a school friend who I hadn't seen in years. And she said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a stay-at-home mum, because I thought if I said I was a novelist or an author, she'd think I'd have Notions. So now I...
You're owning it.
Yeah, my daughter says, say it with chest. I say it with chest. I'm a novelist. There you go.
There's another sleepwalking message here. Once on holiday, once in Budapest, in a top-class hotel out of season, I woke up having left my bedroom in the middle of the night. I noticed the corridor door closed behind me and lock. The only choice was to go to the rather grand reception. Unfortunately, I wasn't wearing any clothes.
What?
Rather embarrassing, says Craig.
That's actually really bad.
But again, it's out of their usual location and that's where this...
I have a tip for Greg. If you sleepwalk, always wear pyjamas, Greg. Like, I mean, come on, rookie error there now.
What if taking your pyjamas off is part of sleepwalking?
You could.
I want to finish with some lovely messages to you. Hello to Carmel. New Carmel from Aer Lingus. Great girl. Love from Breda, who's former Aer Lingus.
Oh, wow.
And that writer is just a joy to listen to. Like the new Maeve Binchy. Can't wait to read her book, says that one, which is called The Stolen Child, published by Headline and in all good bookshops and libraries now as well.
Thank you.
Carmel Harrington, good luck to you and the novelist Nate. We look forward to the zombie architectural genius thing that emerges.
One of these days, yeah.
But in the meantime, enjoy all the crack you're having with The Stolen Child and mind how you go.
Thank you so much. Thank you.